This is the recording for Computer Science 455 on August 31st, 2009.
Yes,
recording. Second thing is about a third of the class has not uploaded the information that I asked for in the first assignment. The picture, your name, your email address, and optionally your phone number. I only have 15 of them. There are about 24 people in the class. So, yeah. It wouldn't let you, that's right, because there was no info thing there this morning after I did the ones that had turned it in. So I put it back just before class, and when I realized I had to talk about this, and try again and tell me if it works. I didn't actually test it. So we need to get that done, because otherwise when it comes to turn in the real assignments, you won't be able to. So do it. Questions? Yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay. Vic, do you want to check that out amongst the stuff? That's Jason, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Jason Wendland? Okay. Oh. Daniel Pepka? Okay. Okay. Not on there either. And your name is? William Reinhardt. This is very weird. And of course, you didn't get emails confirming your submission because we didn't have your email address at that point. So, okay. Well, we'll check it out. I tell you what. Send Vic. Email saying your name, your email address, and attach a photo, if you will. And we'll just do it that way. If you think you submitted it and it didn't show up, but I'd still rather have them come in through the regular process. But if you already tried once and something went wrong, we'll do it the other way. Yes?
So if the name's on the list, does that mean you haven't turned it in yet?
If the name is on the list, it means you have turned it in.
Okay.
Yes, those are the ones that I have. Yeah. Okay. So the plan for today is to finish talking about performance. That's section 1.4. Go on and talk about layering. A little bit on the history of networking. I don't want to spend a lot of time on that. And then if there's time, we'll start on chapter 2. I had a comment from Bori about wouldn't it be nice if we could record the voice and the presentation at the same time and upload something that sort of combined the two. I think it would be nice. The solutions that I have found for it so far result in files that are much too big. But we can work on that. So I agree. It would be nice. Okay, so last time we sort of finished up with this caravan analogy that got to the idea of transmission time and queuing and the total delay, just to refresh your memory. And about where we were. And so now we want to talk about what are the components that make up the delay that a packet sees on a hop-by-hop basis. So, of course, the first thing is that when a packet arrives at a node, a router, a host of any kind, there's going to be some delay associated with the processing, which is this D proc. How long does it take to figure out what the packet represents and where it has to go next? All right. So that's usually pretty short. We're trying to get at some idea of what the magnitude of these numbers is. So this one's going to be in the order of microseconds, typically, because it's not that hard to figure out where the packet has to go next to make sure that it's a legitimate packet and so forth. The second component, right, the packet comes into the host, we figure out where it's going to go, and then it gets put on a queue that's associated with some outgoing line. So how long does it sit in the queue? It sits in the queue until everything in front of it in the queue has been processed out onto the line. So how long it spends in the queue, it, as a number, depends not only on the speed of the line, but also how much traffic there is ahead of it waiting for that line. Okay, that's queuing delay. Transmission delay, L, remember, is the length of the packet, and R is the transmission rate. What are the units on those two things? What's the length of the packet? Bits, say. And the transmission rate is, I heard it, speak up, bits per second. And when we take L over R, we get bits over bits per second. So the unit on the delay is seconds, as we expect it to be. And finally, the propagation delay, remember, is the amount of time that it takes a bit to go from there to there at the speed of propagation in whatever medium we're talking about. That's usually some modest fraction of the speed of light for the kind of communication we're talking about. But of course, you could think of communication lengths that use sonar. You could use communication lengths that use speaking tubes, tin cans on the ends of string. They'll have significantly different propagation delays. Okay, so queuing. We've talked about most of these. We've talked about the transmission delay and the propagation delay and how they get calculated. The queuing delay depends on the traffic, and there's a key ratio that is associated with queuing delay, and that's known as the traffic intensity, or the sometimes called the link utilization. Actually, it's related to the link utilization. The problem is that before we say what the problem is, we know the link bandwidth measured in bits per second, right? Bits over seconds. And we know the packet length, bits. And if we have a bunch of packets arriving that want to go out on that link, they represent a load. So the arrival rate is in, really, bits per second as well. So what do we get here? We have there's a claim here that this ratio L times A over R is important. It's called traffic intensity. What is it? What sort of units does it have? L is bits, and A is bits per second. I end up with too many bitses, I think. Yeah. And R is bits per second. Packet length. Sorry. This is bits per packet. There we go. This is packets per second. All right. That makes a lot more sense, because when you take L times A over R, you get bits per packet. The arrival rate is packets per second, and R is bits per second, equals 1. Right? There's no unit associated with this ratio of L times A over R. It's a fraction. What it represents is the fraction of the link that we're trying to use. Right? So it's a number that ranges from 0 to 1. And the observation is that when that utilization is 0, what does that mean? It means that a packet arrives, there's not going to be anybody waiting for it in the queue. Right? So the queuing delay is going to be very small in that case. It will just get sent right onto the wire. On the other hand, if the ratio is approaching 1, what that means is that it becomes more and more likely that there's something already there in the queue. And it turns out, as a result of queuing theory, that as long as LA over R is less than 1, we can actually statistically predict the size of the queue on average. But if LA over R is greater than or equal to 1, it's possible to show that the length of the queue will grow unboundedly over time. Okay? So after a long enough time, the queue can be arbitrarily long. So what's the lesson? Let's boil it down to the lesson. A link has an available capacity. You have to arrange your traffic to the offered traffic to be less than that capacity, or you're going to get packet drops, right? Because a queue is going to have a bounded size, going to have a bounded size in the real world. So if the queue can theoretically grow without bound, what that means is that we have to throw away packets, source of packet loss. Okay? Questions about that? Is it trivial? I don't see looks on faces that suggest it's trivial. But I will assert that it is important. So this is an important slide. And we'll come back to this idea more when we talk about the behavior of routers and so on and so forth. But as an introduction, this is, you know, just one of those basic concepts of networking that you got to get in your head, that a link has a finite capacity. If you offer less load to it than it can deliver, then all will be good, although the more closer you get, the longer packets will wait. If you offer more load than it can handle, all is not good. Okay, so question is next, what do realistic times look like for these delays? And one way to get a handle on that, a feeling of it, is to use the traceroute program. On Unix, it goes by the name traceroute, and you can easily install it from your Linux distribution if you haven't already. Actually, it's a lowercase t, traceroute. On Windows, it goes by the name tracert, just to be different. And what this program does is it sends out packets in such a way that they will only travel a limited distance in the network before a reply is sent. And so what it does, it sends three probes to the first that can only go one hop and figures out how long it takes for the router to say, well, it had to go farther than one hop, so it gets a message back. So it gets three measurements of how long it takes to get to the first router. Okay, then it does three more to the second router, and so on and so forth. Okay, it does, keeps doing that until it gets to the ultimate destination. And so this is the kind of report that you get from the Unix or Linux version of Traceroute. He's doing a Traceroute to someplace in France, www.uricom.france. All right, and so he gets a report back for each of the hops that it takes to get there, and he gets three reports. Often you'll see an asterisk here for one of these, or maybe even all three of them at some locations. That means it didn't get a reply back at all. Bottom line. Oh, it says that right there. Bottom line, all the way to the destination, 132 milliseconds. So sort of a tenth of a second from Massachusetts, tenth of a second, a little more than a tenth of a second from Massachusetts to France. I thought it would be fun to try it ourselves and see what we get. Yes. Definitely want to keep those. This is Windows, of course. So, Traceroute Fantasia.uricom.france. Well, why is that? Did I misspell it?
Fantasia.uricom. Where are you getting the Fantasia from?
Ah, that's why. I was getting the Fantasia from the last line, which I knew I tried this before. There we go. Okay, so if you try this, don't be alarmed by this long pause that you sometimes get between the lines. Sometimes they'll come out quickly, and other times they come out slowly. The long pauses are associated with it trying to figure out a name for the router along the way. And so they don't really mean anything about how long it took to get to the router, just how long to look up its name.
Does it take the pause when you can't figure out an actual name and just gives it the IP address instead?
Yeah. That's right. Okay, so it takes significantly longer. And one of the things to notice about this is that this is not a very scientific process because sometimes it takes longer to get to an earlier place than it ends up taking to get to a later place. And that can have to do with the load on the intermediate routers and what sort of priority they put on responding to silliness like classes probing them, classes like ours probing them. So I don't know, I think it, as I recall, there were a couple of these and then we got to the final one. But maybe not. I guess it's not going to reply. Okay, so we'll end it with Control-C. Make it go away. But you can see from the names that it looked up that you can get a sense of where our packets have gone. There's this Washington K20 net that schools in Washington use. It rattles around in there. Pullman, Spokane, Seattle. Then it gets transferred to something called the Gigapop, and then a network called NLR.net where it goes to Denver, Chicago, New York. Then London, we're guessing, London in the UK, Paris in France, then it rattles around in France for a while, and all in all, takes a while to get there. So, realistic time then for a packet to go from Pullman to somewhere in France is 300 milliseconds, about 3/10 of a second.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So, when you do a trace route and it's going from the first spot to the last, and you see like the first, like say 11 says 144 milliseconds, and 12 says 144, and 13 250.
Uh huh.
Those, it doesn't actually take that long to go from there to there. Those don't all add up, correct?
No, they don't all add up. Each of these is a separate measurement. There's a lot of variability in the individual measurements. So the more interesting one here is number 13, where it said it took 250 milliseconds to go 13 hops, but it took 197 to go 14.
Right.
So there's a lot of noise in these measurements. You can't, and you don't add these all up. Each one of them is the total time to go that many.
That's what always confused me, was that if you're taking more hops, how does the time go down? Is that just noise?
Just noise.
Okay.
Just noise. Different queuing delays, different response delays in the routers at different times.
So
yeah.
Wouldn't that ping give
you the... Okay, so you're asking about ping. So ping is a little different in that it only tells us about the end-to-end delay. It doesn't tell us about the intermediate spots. And they don't want to respond to pings anymore. So Google's good. They always respond. So those numbers there tell us how long it takes to get from here to Google, and 18 milliseconds. That's pretty good. So 18 milliseconds. That's a 50th of a second. Right, which is quite a bit better than even a tenth, certainly a lot better than 3/10. All right. If I can do this without. Next. Okay. So, next concept related to performance is called throughput. Basically, this is a measurement of a rate. So, again, it's bits per second. And we talk about the bandwidth of a link, usually, which has the same units, closely related. Although bandwidth is, the term bandwidth is more usually applied to the capacity of a link, and throughput is applied to the actual performance achieved. Okay? So we'll most often talk about throughput as being an end-to-end property rather than a property of a link. Go on to the next slide. But we can think about capacities and bandwidth in a sort of general way. Suppose we have a small capacity link first and a big capacity link second. What limits the overall achieved throughput? Well, obviously the small capacity link. Think of it as a pipe. When you put a small pipe into a big pipe, the limit is not determined by the big pipe. It's determined by the small pipe. The other idea about throughput is sometimes we talk about the average throughput and other times we talk about the instantaneous throughput. And so I was doing, what was I doing? I was doing some updates of my Linux system the other day, and I observed that the tool I was using reported how many bits it was downloading per second, and that number would go up and down, right? And so it was reporting, and the projected time would go up and down sort of in close correspondence with the variation in the reported bandwidth. It was reporting the instantaneous bandwidth and making a prediction of how long it was going to take on the basis of that. At the end, when you finish, right, it's taken a certain amount of time to transfer a certain number of bits, That's the average throughput. Both. So instantaneous average. Not difficult. I don't know why. Okay. Good word. Bottleneck. The bottleneck in any computer system is the thing that limits the performance. And in the case of communication paths, we usually talk about a bottleneck link, right, as being the link with the lowest available bandwidth for this transfer. Why do I say available bandwidth? Because sometimes links get shared, are being shared between multiple connections, in which case we're sharing the available bandwidth. So it's a nice big fat pipe, but if I'm trying to run a lot of connections through it, the share available to any particular connection is going to be small. Okay. Go slow. Questions about this? It's a lot of terminology, very basic, simple math to go with it. Not a lot of, no. Not nearly calculus. But you got to get the terminology into your head. Okay. So the next section here is on protocol layers and service models. I hinted at this in one of the early lectures, that we have these very complex networks that have a lot of different properties that are of interest to us. They have hosts, they have applications, they have routers, they have protocols. How do we make all sense of this? And so the community that does networking development sort of early on came up with this idea that we can layer our intellectual understanding of what's going on into some separate concepts that all compose nicely. And that's the point of this section, is to introduce you to this idea of layering in networks. Oops, I went too. So, I don't know. I'm gonna skip over that because I don't find it all that useful. So, come up with an explicit structure for talking about, at least, networking. Turns out that most of the implementations of networking have also followed this model, so you can actually see in the code a reflection of this intellectual understanding of networking. But right now we're just going to talk about it from the point of view of conceptualization. There is a community of people who think that this, particularly the idea of doing implementations of networking using layering, is a bad idea, and that we would get higher performance networking if we could step away from the idea of layering a bit. I agree to a certain extent. So, what are the layers that we are going to be talking about in this class? We have typically an application layer where we have things like web services, mail services, FTP we don't use anymore, SCP, SSH, DNS. Okay, lots of different things that live at the application layer. They actually deliver services to other programs, and you sort of escape from the network world at that point and go off and do something useful. Okay. Yeah.
Are there any examples of networking stacks that don't use layers?
Networking. Well, I guess as soon as you say stack, we sort of mean layer. I think everybody these days at least talks about layering to some extent.
Even stuff like iSCSI or
They get talked about in terms of being sort of, they don't ever get up to the application layer, right? But they get talked about as being network or link protocols. Okay, so those are the applications. Below the applications, we have a layer that's called transport. And the role of transport is to provide things like reliability and delivery to particular applications. Right? At least in the internet, this is the main role that's allocated to the transport layer. So process-to-process data transfer. Below that is the network layer, where the protocol that is most used in the internet is called IP, the Internet Protocol, and its role is host-to-host data transfer. So notice that we have, on any particular host, we have, may have many applications, and so the data gets transferred by the network layer to the host, and then the host has to figure out, using the transport protocol, which application it is that is going to get it. Okay, so that's end-to-end. So sourced to destination. And then below that is the link protocols. And these are data transfer between neighboring network elements. So just between two points, really. One hop, a single hop. That's a better way to put it. Single hop. Okay, and at that layer, we have things like Ethernet, the point-to-point protocol, some aspects of the protocols used in DSL service, 802.11 Wi-Fi service, all have significant components that operate at the link layer. And then all of those also have significant components that operate at the physical layer. And the physical layer is where we get down to wires, fibers, radios. We're no longer talking of, he says bits here. I'm going to say electrons or photons on the wire. All right? Not bits. The physical layer is responsible for taking bits and turning them into actual physical quantities like electrons, voltages, currents, light pulses, whatever. And so there are rules at that level so that different people can manufacture the equipment and have it all sort of operate at the physical level. Questions about this? Real quick tour. This is the IP picture. Historically, this layered approach to networking got worked out in an organization called the International Standards Organization, ISO, and the work was done in the context of a project called Open Systems Interconnection. So it's the ISO OSI reference model. Their picture of the world was somewhat more complex than the internet picture of the world. They had, in addition, these presentation and session layers, which they tried to standardize as well. And in the internet, we just sort of fold those into the application layer and don't really ever talk about them as separate layers in the protocol stack. Things like, well, CORBA run into that, or interoperation. Web session shopping carts in web shopping are an example of a session idea that we have some interactions going on over a long period of time. There may be a lot going on, a lot of different transport things happen in the course of that, but somehow your shopping session all ends up with you buying a basket of goods. Presentation has to do with the order of bytes and bits of, in packets and what they mean. When I get 4 bytes, is it a part of a string? Is it an integer? Is it a part of a floating point number? In the internet, we fold all that into the application layer more and more. We put that stuff into libraries, but we don't really talk about it as being standardized as part of the network model. Okay, so along with the layered model comes this implementation idea that we will have different code implementing the different code and hardware implementing the different parts of the networking, and that messages will be passed within a host down through those layers across a link, maybe processed at a switch or a router, up through some of the layers, and ultimately delivered to another host where it gets processed upwards through the code modules and delivered to the application. All right, so that's sort of obvious from the implementation point of view. The other thing that happens from the implementation point of view along the way is that as messages, I think he has some, oh, he actually illustrates this. Okay, so let's do this. So as the message gets passed down through the layers, the message actually grows. It grows by adding on some additional data called the header for that particular layer. And so the first thing that gets added is the transport header, and then we add a network header. And this is pretty good. Add a link header. Whoosh! Good show. Take off the link header. Take off. Oops. I guess he. All right. So we take off the link header. And then send it out again, adding a new link header for the next link, right? Which then gets all peeled away. All those headers get peeled away as it goes up through this code and ultimately gets delivered to the application. Now, what's interesting about this, and the reason we call all of this stuff protocols, is because notice that in this example, let me point to particularly at the network layer. Remember, a protocol is a set of rules for understanding and processing the messages that you get. So whatever this bit of code did over here at the source in the network layer has to be understood by the network layer over here. Right? So there's two bits of code working here. There's the network code here and the network code here. They both have to understand what's going on just on the basis of this network header. Right? That's where the rules come in. Right? The idea of a protocol is to say what are the rules that pertain to that network header. And notice that the network code here does not have to understand HT, the transport header. That's a key reason we do layers, is so that that the scope of understanding of the network protocol does not have to include the transport protocol, right? Which would make it a lot more complicated. Questions about that? This is really a sort of key idea that motivates the whole way that this class gets taught. It motivates the whole way that we program for the networks. So make sure you understand this. Important. Right? Encapsulation. The idea that we can pick up a chunk of data and wrap it with our own header and interact with another entity somewhere else in the network that understands our header but doesn't understand anything else about what's inside that packet. Okay. 7 minutes for history. Good. Okay, so early on, okay, well, context. When were computers invented? Not by Intel, not by Microsoft.
What's your definition of computer?
Well, like ENIAC, UNIVAC. So late 1930s, World War II, some construction of very gigantic and expensive machines to do very specific things like calculate how to aim guns and things like that. But real general purpose computing didn't get started until the early 1950s. Okay? And that was just working out how to build a computer. Right? Something that could crunch numbers. They were most interested in calculating. Computers for business, late 1950s. And then people start thinking about hooking them together. The military, of course, has had communication networks for much longer than that, but they didn't have anything to do with computers. But this guy, Kleinrock, came up with the idea of packet switching based on an analysis from queuing theory. And so in the early 60s, that got experimented with a little bit. But in 1967, this agency called the Advanced Research Projects Agency of the Department of Defense commissioned research and implementation of what became known as the ARPANET, right? A real packet switching network between computers. Right? That was the idea. Got demonstrated in 72. First email happened at that point. And there were 15 networked computers in the world. 15. Okay, so then people got to thinking about, well, could we have multiple computers at each site on the ARPANET? Could we hook things together with radios? That's AlohaNet, first sort of really wireless computer networking. Ethernet got invented in 1976 at my alma mater. I wasn't there at the time, but that was sort of seminal in constructing local area networks. At about the same time, IBM was developing what was known as token ring networking, that was very similar. It was intended to hook up computers around an office. It was a lot more complicated, and although it was in some ways better, it was more complicated, it was more expensive, and Ethernet won for local area networking. Late 70s, people were trying out lots of different things. IBM had a wide area networking called SNA. That's what it was known as, SNA. System Network Architecture, I think. Lots of experimentation. But the thing that won was based on ARPANET, and the transport protocols and internet protocol that got derived from what was learned in the ARPANET. And this became what we now know as the internet. Out of that, mainly out of that that ARPANET work, as well as a lot of research since then. In the late 80s, the National Science Foundation, NSF, paid a lot of money, basically, to the phone companies to lease communication lines that universities could hook up to and implement what has now become the beginnings of the actual beginnings of the internet, the physical beginnings as opposed to the intellectual beginnings. This expanded to 100,000 hosts, mainly at universities. Rules were that you could only use it for research, communication of research data. You couldn't do anything commercial on it. There were lots of battles between organizations and arguments about whether something was or was not commercial use. Early 1990s, commercial use was blessed. Okay, and right about then, 1990, this guy named Tim Berners-Lee invented HTML and HTTP, and the World Wide Web was born. And since then, we're up to, I don't know, it says 50 million hosts, but I think that number is low by an order of magnitude. I think we're surely up to 500 million internet hosts, if not more, at this point. To the point where the 32-bit addresses that we use for hosts in the internet, that space of numbers is under great pressure at this point. And remember, 32-bit numbers let you address 4 billion things. So even the 500 million may be small. There are inefficiencies in the way it's allocated that get you a lot of pressure before you get anywhere close to 4 billion. But this is sort of the sort of number that we're talking about worldwide. And later in the class, we'll talk about how things are changing to address this magnitude. Oh, there it is, 500 million hosts in 2007. Okay, and we do all kinds of crazy things. Fine. Okay, so I will post an assignment definitely before Wednesday. It will be due, Friday of next week for your planning purposes. Questions? See you Wednesday.